Monty Show, Thursday, July 19th, 2018. Hello, Jake.
Hello.
Hello.
Lots going on in sports. Jimmy Garoppolo's dating a porn star. Gotta love that. All right, let's lead with that. No,
I'm
kidding.
How much shame? Like,
well, one of the things I want to talk about.
Let's just jump into it. I'm fine. You know, we can do it. I mean, it's a Thursday. Like, here in Arizona, it's like 100 and a million degrees out. So
that's why you should live in San Diego.
But she also apparently towards, you know, to Jimmy is also 100 and a million degrees hot out. So, you know, it's good.
All right, you want to start with that?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, let's go.
Jimmy Garoppolo, which was the kicker story today, by the way.
I like it. It's funny to me.
Jimmy Garoppolo, who is arguably one of the hottest properties in professional sports.
Yeah.
Jimmy G is dating somebody named Kiara Mia.
Okay, first of all, that's a rough name.
Yeah.
That's rough.
As a disclaimer, I think I'm the only guy on the planet that does not routinely look at pornography. It's just not my thing. I always have referred to pornography as the great destroyer of men.
Oh, and it's true. There's, you know, countless examples.
Yeah, but look at our president, Donald Trump, right now with Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, pornography is the great destroyer of men. There, I said it. Jimmy Garoppolo had a date, and it's on video all over TMZ. He had a date with this Kiara Mia lady. And she is a, you know, a well-endowed,
allegedly the most famous porn star right now. Allegedly. That's what the
What happened to Mia
say.
Khalifa?
But she's apparently she's not in that industry anymore. She's doing
Mia Khalifa doesn't do porn anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. All right. So the baller, Kiara Mia.
It's so painful to even say it. Yeah. Like, it's ridiculous.
Kiara Mia and Jimmy Garoppolo go out on this date in front of all the cameras, not hiding. TMZ easily caught him through a window. Like, they weren't trying to hide.
Yeah.
Here's my point on this. We in society look down on porn stars, rightly or wrongly. Like, I think it's cool to be Stormy Daniels when you're suing the president.
Yeah.
But then when you go home at night, you're still Stormy Daniels, the porn star.
Right.
And you get arrested in a strip club in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Like, I think we are very judgmental in society. Like, if Kiara Mia walked in here, I'm not going to hate on her, but I'm not dating a porn star. Like, I always say this, I know the volume of customers that go to Walmart.
Yeah.
Thus, I don't want to go to that Walmart.
Yeah.
So I would have trouble dating a porn star. If you're Jimmy Garoppolo, does this damage you in some way? I have to think it does.
I mean, just people's perception of you. I mean, it's like...
Which is huge,
you know, I mean,
for
which
a quarterback.
Is huge, yeah, but at the same time, I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, I just don't... What do you have to gain here? What are you doing? I mean, the quickest conclusion that all of us can come to is he's only dating her for one reason. Like, that's the sad part about it, right? Like, that's the sad part about it. Yeah.
She's not even, I probably should have done my pre-show research on this before the show. That's why they call it pre-show research. But she's not even, I mean, she looks like a porn star.
Yeah, she has that look about her. Like, and I'm not going to try and describe it. You know what I'm talking about.
She's very voluptuous. She's very curvaceous.
Everything is exaggerated. Like, we get it.
What is the good that comes out of this for Jimmy Garoppolo? Like, great sex? You're going to have porn star sex?
I mean,
everybody aspires to, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, apparently, if that's what you wanted, but all I have to say is I'd rather have Giselle than that. Like, I'd rather be Brady than that. Like, you know, I don't know, though.
Olivia Munn and Aaron Rodgers used to date. Like, I mean, there are all kinds of... the guy's the starting quarterback for the 49ers.
Yeah.
I don't understand this, because I do think this hurts him, point blank. I think dating an adult film actress hurts Jimmy Garoppolo. His reputation, I think partially his marketability.
Yeah.
I think fan perception of him. Now, there's going to be a bunch of guys who are like, oh, yeah, what's Jim Rome always say, pounding like a porn star? Oh, yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo is pounding like a porn star.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all good and awesome and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think Jimmy Garoppolo... Does this stain the golden boy image?
I don't know, because I don't feel like I'm going to be thinking about this if I'm watching him playing a game. Like, it's not as though, like, they went to dinner, Like, it's not as though this is some embarrassing story. Like, but the problem is that she's a porn star, so it brings it down to this level where we're all like, ooh, she's a porn star, so that means she's a horrible person.
Well, there's a stigma attached to it.
You know, and so I just say to myself, like, I have no idea what she's like as a person. I mean, she could be a nice person, but, like, you're always, once you go into that industry, you're going to have a stigma, and there's no way to get away from it.
Yeah, and, but this is, again, what Rafael Barba on SVU has said.
Well, best prosecutor.
Drug dealers are not good people, but they're nice guys.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you were dealing smack on the side, I would have no idea.
Right.
And I think you're a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yeah. Hey, but there's a stigma if you say to me, by the way, I'm dealing smack to make a living.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, you know, you got to go.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, nice to meet you, Kiara. What do you do? Oh, I'm a porn star. Oh. Like, it's just that there's a stigma. But is it wrong?
But, like,
I don't think it is. To
judge women for it? Specifically women, because it's different for men and women. And I think that that's a key point. It's different for men than it is for women.
Well, we in society treat women differently when it comes to sex.
Of course, but that's
what I'm saying. If a guy is having sex with 10 different women, he's a stud.
Yeah.
If a woman's having sex with 10 different guys, she's a hoe.
Yeah.
Which is not right.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I as a rule, I don't generally judge people. But there's something, quite frankly, there's something about sex that's different. I can't stand infidelity. If you're out cheating on your wife, and I'm going to judge you for that. It is that thing about sex. It's Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
It's the Kennedys and Marilyn Monroe.
Well, it's that thing we love to hate, really. I mean, it's that thing like that makes... It is why Trump is constantly on the news. Like that, the you know, the Stormy Daniels controversy... held things over on CNN for the longest time.
Why? Because, she's a porn star. And what did he do? He allegedly was involved in paying her a six-figure payout to keep the affair that they had, this one-time sexual encounter, according to Stormy Daniels, that they had, secret, out of the public eye. And why is that? Because when you're Donald Trump and you're running for president, the idea that you would have sex with a porn star just doesn't jibe with, you know, the base.
What you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it doesn't jibe with the base. Oh, by the way, you're also cheating on your wife. Why is Tiger Woods a guy that is infamous now?
But I almost feel like when it comes to Tiger, like, that is no longer the first thing I think about when I hear Tiger.
Oh,
like,
man.
It's always going to be there, but it used to be like, oh, yep, Tiger's that guy. And now I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what was Tiger's score today?
He was even.
And so I'm just like, wow, that's nice. Solid performance, bro.
Yeah, boy, he played good golf, too. At one point he was 2 under, but he hit a bunker a couple of times.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, the conversation around Tiger has, and I don't know why, but it's gone from... hey, you did all that stuff to now, oh, what'd you do on the course today? How are you looking in the tournament?
How's Lindsey Vonn? Oh, that's right. She dumped you because you cheated on her.
Yeah, you know.
Sex is always going to be part of the Tiger Woods narrative.
Yeah.
That's why I say, and it's not even that I think Kiara Mia is some bad person, but it is not a good look for a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, whether that's right or wrong. I don't know.
Does he care? Probably not.
Well, he's out to dinner with her. I don't know. How does Jimmy Garoppolo feel? If you search Jimmy Garoppolo right now, it's Jimmy Garoppolo had dinner with a porn star last night. How does Jimmy Garoppolo feel about Jimmy Garoppolo having dinner with a porn star, according to the Boston Globe and Sports Illustrated and Heavy.com and Patriots Wire and Complex? Like, these are, I just put in a Google search of Jimmy Garoppolo. And the first thing that comes up is the San Francisco Chronicle. Jimmy Garoppolo dates porn star Kiara Mia. That's the first thing that comes up.
Yeah.
The big lead. Jimmy Garoppolo went on a date with an adult film star. SOHH.com comes up with a story on. Like, it's just... It's
everywhere.
It's every... Even in Spanish language.
Yeah.
Univision has a story right here about Jimmy Garoppolo dating a porn star.
Yeah.
It's not Jimmy Garoppolo's undefeated as a starting quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo getting ready to go to his first camp with the 49ers.
Yeah.
That's not what it is now. And so to wrap this up, I think the point is there is absolutely a stigma, rightly or wrongly, around porn stars. And when you are a big-time professional athlete and you're dating a porn star, okay, I can accept that if you're Rob Gronkowski, who was naked with a porn star and everybody, you know, reveres him for it.
Yeah.
But when you're the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers and pretty much any other team around the league, when you're the starting quarterback and you're this nice, clean-cut guy,
yeah,
and all of a sudden you show up on a date with a porn star,
yeah,
I think it changes the way people look at you.
Yeah.
Whether you want that to be the case or not. Let's talk a little Padre baseball. Because here in the Southland, people are freaking out over a big trade the Padres made. And the deal was Brad Hand, the all-star closer, Adam Simber, the reliever, to the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah.
They send back Francisco Mejia, a catcher slash outfielder, who's a great hitter, had a 50-game hitting streak in the minors across two levels of
crazy
minor league play.
Like, crazy.
The guy can legitimately hit, but apparently he does not have a position. Okay? And really what this does is it gives Cleveland everything they wanted. They needed to remake their bullpen. Hand has been, again, a two-time All-Star. Simber's been really solid for the Padres. So this was a really good trade, I think, for both sides.
Yeah.
It's a really good trade. But I don't even want to talk about Francisco Mejia yet. I'm going to talk about Austin Hedges, because this is the big conversation around the Padres right now.
Yeah.
Is Francisco Mejia's presence at El Paso, AAA, is the clock ticking on Austin Hedges? My opinion is it's not, or at least it shouldn't be, because I think a couple of things come into play. Austin Hedges is not Preller's guy. That's not his catcher. That was not his prospect. It's not his guy. I think that's part of it. The second half of this conversation around Hedges is the complaining about his offensive ability, which I think is so overplayed. He had 18 bombs last year, hit .214, like did not have a great year at the plate, right? Like
I think
you would agree with that. But doesn't everybody say that 2017 was a breakout year for Austin Hedges? And is that simply because he hit the ball over the wall 18 times? I think so.
I don't know, but what I do know is that some of the best catchers in the game weren't always great hitters. I know that to be a fact. And if you look at, again, his defensive numbers, some of the best in the big leagues.
He is the best defensive catcher in baseball based on the metrics. If you go to Fangraph, if you go to, I mean, just any of the sites that you go to or the knowledgeable baseball analysts that you go to will tell you that Austin Hedges is the best defensive catcher in baseball. Number two in caught stealing last year. Like, all of the stats that you want to look at. Runs saved. Yeah. Austin Hedges, number one. The issue is that in 2017, he had 18 home runs, 55 RBIs, and 122 strikeouts, 23 walks. He hit .214, .262 on base, .398 slugging.
It's not great. I mean, not at all.
But for a 24-year-old catcher in his first full season, it's the first time he had 400 plate appearances, his fourth season with actual major league playing time.
Yeah.
Okay. It's respectable. This year, he's only played 39 games because of injury. So he's missed a significant number of games, right? I think tomorrow is game 100. For the Padres,
yeah,
if memory serves me right?
Yeah.
So he's played 39 games. He's missed 61 games. That's a lot of games. He's got four home runs and 17 RBIs. He's hitting .232, 15 points. Well, actually, if you want to be, you know, that's 16, so 18 points higher than last year. Slugging .289, 27 points higher than last year. And he's on base .289. Average numbers, but they're better than last year's numbers. And people are freaking out saying that this guy can't hit.
I mean, I think, okay, again, this is depends how you look at it. So that's a small sample size.
Yep.
And yeah, numbers are better. But over the course of a season, would he trend back down to where he was over a course of 160, 150 games, like whatever he would play?
Well, I don't think he would, because he really worked on his swing. bat plane, launch angle, all that great stuff that everybody's working on.
Yeah.
And I think the last 2 weeks of the first half, he really got hot.
Yeah.
He played well. I think the pitching ticked up a little bit because of his presence. They played horrendous baseball the last two series of the year. I mean, the Cubs series.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched every pitch of that Cubs series, and it was horrendous baseball.
Yeah.
I don't think any of that was on Austin Hedges, even though he did throw a ball in the center field that Margot kicked.
By the way, that's going to happen. And yes. I think it's important to say that he's a catcher. He's not a corner position player, so he's not right or left fielder or first or third baseman. So you don't need him to hit, 300. Like, if he could hit 250, give you 20 bombs, like, that's a great season for the guy. You know, if his focus needs to be defensive, he needs to have a great season behind the plate, and he needs to lead that staff.
Yeah.
That's all he needs to do. And by the way, one of the best catchers in the game, Yadier Molina, couldn't hit, like, for the longest time. And has come around, towards the back end of his career.
And this is what I was saying on Twitter today, is that, the Cardinals won a World Series in 2006 against the Detroit Tigers with Yadier Molina on the season hitting .214.
Yeah.
Yet, in the postseason, he hit really well. They pitched really well. And you'd have thought that I said some revolutionary, unbelievable, holy cow, what is wrong with you kind of thing.
Right.
Because Matthew Trueblood, who is actually a really good baseball guy, he's a baseball prospectus guy, he's a really good baseball guy. He's telling me that St. Louis didn't win the World Series because of Yadier Molina. Okay. Molina's striking out at a career worst rate this year, 15%. Hedges whiffed twice as much of that last year. Okay, but here's the thing. What has baseball become in the last 10 years?
It becomes about the moments. It becomes about the moments.
No, it becomes about striking out. Everybody's striking out. You know, launch angle, bat plane, everybody's uppercutting. Everybody's trying to hit the long ball. The game has completely changed. I covered the Cardinals in 05 and 06. And Tony La Russa and I had long conversations about the fact that Yadier Molina didn't even need to bring a bat to the plate. As long as he threw guys out and framed pitches, he was always going to be the number one catcher. And that's where I think this club needs to be with Austin Hedges. The offense is going to come.
Yeah.
Okay? You're looking at Yadier Molina, who in the first 5 years of his career could simply not make contact at a professional rate. And he's turned himself into a 300 hitter. Austin Hedges has the potential to be a 25 home run guy that's going to hit 250, 260. And in 2018, 19, 20, 21, those are going to be very respectable numbers. The catcher in today's day and age that's hitting 335 bombs, who is that?
I don't know. I don't know.
It doesn't exist, and I wish people would stop quitting at every opportunity on Austin Hedges. And I might be making too much of that, but I feel like Austin Hedges is becoming the punching bag of the Padres.
Well, I mean, I just think he's one of the bigger names on the team, and it's easy to pick on him. Like, there's not, like, look at the other big names on the team. What are you going to pick on Hosmer about? Like, what are you going to pick on Will Myers about? I mean, I guess they haven't, I mean, you can...
If Austin Hedges was your offensive problem, I could see that. Yeah. But you just mentioned two guys who have woefully underperformed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a big believer in Hosmer. I personally have, I don't think we know enough about the construct of this baseball team to know if Will Myers is going to be there. But Will Myers, it's not like he's ripping the cover off the ball.
Yeah.
He's another guy that's been hurt consistently. Why is Perella still playing every day? Spange is a nice little story who should not be on a Major League Baseball team.
Point is, though, I do think that this trade was a good trade for them. I think it's solid.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Yes, I think this was a great, not a solid trade. This was a home run.
Mm-hmm.
You have 10 prospects in the top 100 of Major League Baseball. You have three in the top 10. You have a bunch of guys And whether that is Fernando Tatis, my guy is Luis Urias, who I still don't understand why he's not here. I can see, in my opinion anyway, I think Fernando Tatis is your cornerstone third baseman going forward. I think that's likely his spot. I think Gabriel Arias is your shortstop of the future. I think Luis Urias is your second baseman of the future. And you have Eric Hosmer at first base. 2020, you're probably going to have that infield. And you're probably going to be a very good defensive infield, and you're going to hit a lot of balls out of the park. Yeah. I think you're in really good shape. Yeah. And that we're not even talking about the fact now that you have guys like Mackenzie Gore, who is, I think, the best left-handed pitching prospect in all of baseball. Mackenzie Gore. He is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the question, it's great that you have all these prospects. That's awesome. I mean, you put yourself in a great spot, but how many of these guys are actually going to pan out? That's the question.
Just give me half of them. Give me five of those 10 guys in the top 100. Give me five of those.
And by the way, I think the question needs to start being asked. Okay, well, even if it is just five guys that pan out, what does success look like for those guys? And, like, I hope that the Padres have a plan for this. Like, hey, here's where you need to be. Like with Austin Hedges is another great example. Like, hey, you're here right now. This is where we need you to get to. Like, I hope they have that stuff lined out, because with where they're at, that's what they need to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And it just, who's the best catcher in baseball? If I said to you,
Wilson Contreras. I mean,
defensively or all total package? All, so it's not Buster Posey.
Not anymore. I don't think anymore it is.
Wilson Contreras right now is hitting .279 with 7 home runs, 5 triples, 19 doubles.
And how many at bats?
He's got 294 at bats.
So a lot of at-bats. Pretty solid numbers.
He's played 82 games.
Yeah.
I look at a guy like, I don't know, Buster Posey, who I think is still the best. If I need a big-game catcher.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm probably going Buster because of the World Series experience.
Oh, but, and by the way, the perfect games he's caught. And
But Buster is the best offensive catcher in baseball, in my opinion. 288. He's only got 5 home runs, but he plays in a huge park, and I think that team has really struggled. But I like Buster Posey. I mean, Wilson Ramos right now is the guy that's got the best numbers, hitting 300, 14 bombs. You know, Grandal, nobody's picking Grandal with his 13 home runs and .251 average. You know, so all I'm saying is Austin Hedges is not your problem.
No.
Okay? Austin Hedges is fine.
But again, I think you got to understand that people pick on him because it's easy.
Yeah. I think Francisco Mejia, the guy you got back in the Cleveland trade today, I think he projects out to be a corner outfield. Like Framil Reyes doesn't project out for me. Like he's a designated hitter. He's had a little bit of a cup of coffee, and I actually think he's back in the big leagues now. If I remember right, they called him back up before the break. He's a jag. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think Mejia, who doesn't have a position, he's caught. He's been a DH. He's played both left and right. And we saw him in the fall league last year in Arizona playing third base. So he doesn't have a position.
Yeah.
And if you think that the San Diego Padres are just going to hand Francisco Mejia the starting catching job with this pipeline of pitchers coming up, come on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you cannot undervalue the ability to manage a pitching staff, especially a staff that's going to be young.
Damn right.
Because they are going to be very young.
That's right.
And I think you know, when the Lucchese's of the world are here consistently, and that's a mainstay in your rotation.
You need a catcher that's going to steal strikes, who's going to own
the black. You got to have a catcher who's got some cojones, man. You got to go out there sometimes. In a day and age when visits are so limited and you can't just go out there every single inning.
Yeah, and that's the one place that I would criticize Austin Hedges.
Yeah.
I don't feel like he's got great field generalship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
that's what Yadi has. That's what Buster has.
Correct.
And I think Contreras is starting to get that.
Yeah, I think Contreras's. I think that's one of his strengths, is that pitchers respect him. He puts it down, they throw it. And when things are going well, I mean, as a Cub fan, I watch a ton of Cubs baseball. He will absolutely command a mound visit. And he'll get on Addison Russell for not making the fundamental play. I love that guy. And I think you're right. He's right there. Austin Hedges needs to be more of a badass. I would agree with you on that. What does this do, though, to the NLS? Because there's some thought. Jeff Passan was talking to a scout. He was tweeting out about how this puts the Padres in position 5 years from now to be in control of this division. What are your thoughts on? Because you're as much of an NLS guy as I am.
Yeah.
I actually thought the Padres would finish in the middle of this division this year. Boy, did I get that wrong. But I could see in 3 years that they could be contending to win the West.
I mean, they will have the talent to do that. I do think that comes down to pitching because the West is just such a juggernaut offensively. There's so many great bats in the West. And obviously that's going to change over the next couple of years. But overall, I would say the NLS is a powerhouse of a division when it comes to offense. And so I just think if guys like Lauer and Lucchesi and you get guys like Mackenzie Gore up and they're developed and giving yes. you contribution, like if those kind of guys are giving you – you know, your six innings.
And don't forget about Danielson Lamette, who had Tommy John.
Like that's what I mean. So those
Jordan
kind
Lyles
of guys,
is hurt.
Yeah, so those kind of guys, not Tyson Ross, not Clayton Richard, if your young pitchers can come up and give you performances, I think everything else will take care of itself. The Austin Hedges conversation takes care of itself. Like all, like the Tatises of the world will take care of themselves. And Urias will handle themselves. Like, you know, I just think that they will get to a point where offense will no longer be the problem. You're not going to worry about that. What you're going to worry about is surviving with your young pitchers. That's what's going to get them.
Yeah, and, you know, my other question is, when we talk about all these lineup changes, Christian Villanueva has had a great year at the plate offensively, like driving the ball out of the park. But is there anybody who thinks he's the third baseman of the future for this team?
No.
Like, it's amazing how Padre Nation was really excited about this guy. And he's out. My question is, what is the domino effect throughout the rest of the division from the Manny Machado trade?
I mean, I think people, that kind of a trade, it's easy to be like, yes, we're going out and winning the division. You are already going to do that. Then that's not what the conversation's about. Conversation's about how far in the postseason will you go now that you have Machado. And I still say, I don't think they're getting to the World Series.
That bullpen terrifies me, dude.
Well, it's that, but I just don't. The Dodgers have never had the intangible, the swag, in my opinion. They've never had that. They didn't have what the Astros had. They didn't have what the Cubs had, right? Like, they didn't have that, like, yes, this is their year, you know? And I think that's super important for baseball teams in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, Jock Peterson, Justin Turner, Machado, Bellinger, Kemp, Muncie. Grandal. I think the biggest thing here is Chris Taylor becomes a middle infielder or a center fielder.
Yeah.
And Cody Bellinger's actually represented himself well in center field, so I think they'll probably leave him there. But now Chris Taylor's not a shortstop anymore. Yeah. That makes them a better baseball team.
Well, and it lengthens out the lineup.
And
sure.
And what it does is it puts Logan Forsyth and Chase Utley further out of the game, which I think is a big to-do.
I'm telling you, I still think this shows that Corey Seager is huge. I mean, he's so important to them.
Yeah.
Because if he was in that lineup, what is that lineup? That lineup, that's a stacked lineup. Like, this is solid. Muncy's solid. I have real questions about his ability to do it in the postseason, mainly because he's never been there. He's never been in a huge moment. But we'll see. I mean, he's performed so far.
Where does Puig fit into this outfield?
I don't know, because I'm not a huge Puig guy. You got to play him because of the arm, but I have real questions about his ability to be mentally sound in big moments. Like,
To me, this clearly bumps Jock Peterson out of the lineup, which is fine because it's not like he's been a world beater.
Yeah.
But Matt Kemp's an MVP candidate. I mean, they're a good baseball
team.
Which
is crazy to me that we're having that conversation with what he's done. I mean, he's had a great year, but it's just like just the, hey, I was huge. Like, when I was with the Dodgers before, I leave, I'm nobody, and now I'm back. And it's like, man. I mean, that's quite a turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'll be an interesting dynamic there. I look at, what about your Giants? I mean, that's...
I just think they're running out of steam. Honestly, I feel like when you look at the big picture, I'm not referencing this season, but big picture-wise with where their window's at, I do feel like it's closing. I do feel like they're just at a point where they don't have a lot of momentum. You got to swap out guys like Pence. You got to get younger again. You know, like, I know Buster's always going to be there. Panic's always going to be there. You're always going to have your infield, really.
What about Gorkys Hernandez?
Well, that's a guy where I'm like, you're Jankowski, bro, but you're giving him great numbers, so yeah. You're going to play this year. know? So I don't know, but I still say, if you look at the Dodgers lineup and you look at the Giants lineup and even the Diamondbacks to an end, I mean, those lineups are going to age out by the time the Padres are ready to play. And so I just think it's going to be the Padres on top, and then we're going to get to a point where teams like the Giants and the Dodgers are going to have to spend or just suck for a couple years.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the
Padres... It is definitely secular, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if the Padres are going to have... The Padres are going to get lucky, in my opinion, because they're not going to be playing teams that are dominant teams like they are now. They're going to be playing teams that are still trying to rebuild and still trying to get back for at least 2 years, in my opinion. But, I mean, because if you just look at where the Padres are versus where everybody else is, makes sense. It lines up. So they could be in great shape.
Does Jacob deGrom figure anywhere in this division? Because I don't think he does. I think DeGrom is probably a Cub or a Yankee or a Met, and that's it. Because I just don't see how on earth are you as the Giants. What do you have
he
to offer?
He can't go to the Yankees, bro. Like,
well,
I mean, I know it's the Yankees. I get it. They could get him. But I'm saying if you're the Mets, like,
but if the Yankees say to you, because if you are the Wilpons and you call the Yankees, or the Yankees call you, and say, hey, we want DeGrom. What's it going to take? What's the first name out of your mouth?
Gleyber.
That's the first thing that comes to my mind. You know, I want Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Day, whatever his name is. Because you pronounce it Gleyber. I pronounce it Gleyber. However you say it.
It's probably Gleyber, but whatever.
It's Gleyber Day. Gleyber Torres has to be in that deal if I'm the Mets. Right? I want Gleyber, and I want to add at least one more major leager in there. And then
get an arm back.
I want your two top pitching prospects.
Yeah.
And I want it to be where I have a gun and a mask and I'm holding you up. And you're going to pay me a king's ransom, because that's how I can justify it to Met fans. Because if you trade DeGrom to the Bronx and you get Jimmy the beer vendor back in return, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. I
mean, you're just,
you can't do that. And remember, they have a huge problem, and that is that their general manager, Sandy Alderson, is done. He retired. He's sick again, unfortunately. So he's not in the picture. They have a group. Omar Minaya is in that group as well, but they have a group of guys running that team right now. So is there even a consensus on what it would take to get DeGrom from them?
No, I don't think so. I think anytime you have that kind of a situation where the leader has had to take a step back and so it's run by a committee, I think you can get yourself in trouble, right? Like, you can get yourself in trouble, and I think you make a great point. If you don't get enough back in return, there's going to be some problems. And trade DeGrom, don't get enough in return, and watch what happens to Syndergaard. Watch what happens to guys like Zach Wheeler. You think Zach Wheeler doesn't know he's a grade A pitcher? Like, you know he knows he's coming. So I just think if you're going to trade DeGrom, then you need to trade them all. Like, if you're going to burn it down, just burn that thing down and pour cans of gasoline on it. Like, just start over.
Does Wheeler have value?
Oh, I think he does.
I think he does, too.
I think he's injury prone, but he's worth the risk in today's game.
But if you're the Cubs, I think you have to figure out who you're willing to...
If I'm the Cubs, I'm going after Syndergaard. That's who I want.
DeGrom is a much better pitcher. He's a more durable pitcher. I think he's got a better repertoire. I think he's got a better brain. DeGrom is just beyond belief. I mean, I think you have to, at this point, look through your minor league system and ask yourself who you're willing to give up. And you know what the damage here is that Oscar De La Cruz is on a drug suspension. That was one of the Cubs' top pitching prospects who they would have moved. But he got that huge suspension, and I think that hurts them to a certain extent. But if I'm the Cubs, I'm calling the Mets, and I'm like, okay, hey, well, why don't we build a package around Addison Russell? And you know what? We'll put in Mike Montgomery into that deal. Oh, that's not enough? Okay, how about Addison Russell and Ian Happ? And we'll give you a mid-range and a lower-level prospect. And I'm doing that deal right now. Because I know...
Who are you playing in the infield at that position then?
Well, if I'm the Cubs, I'm in really good shape, because I already know that Ian Happ doesn't have a legit everyday position.
Right. Like, okay? Cut Ian Happ. Great. I don't care about Ian Happ. I'm talking about Addison Russell. The guy can play ball.
I'm playing Javier Baez at shortstop every day.
And then what, you're playing Zobrist?
I think you're playing Zobrist, and I think you're bringing up Bodhi full time from AAA for the Cubs. He's been up and down, and again, he's a guy that's done pretty well for himself.
Yeah, he's had nice moments.
So, and I also think that you are also in the market for a bullpen arm. So I think you have to kind of build that package in.
How did they not get Brad Hand though? This is what I'm saying. The
Cubs were not going to get the dude. The Padres got the number 5 prospect in baseball and the number 1 catching prospect in baseball. That's crazy stuff, man.
I get it. But every time you miss out on a trade, you're losing opportunity. The window's getting smaller. Like, the opportunities are not endless. So who are you going to get? What are you going to go and do if you're the Cubs?
I think
it's got to be
you have to get a starting pitcher,
a frontline starting pitcher.
So that's why I say DeGrom has to be your priority. And then once you get a DeGrom type done, because dude, there's not a whole lot of guys out there. The starting pitching, it in my mind, when you say frontline starter, it's DeGrom, it's Archer, and then it's Syndergaard. And by the way, are the Nationals sellers?
I don't know.
Because I'd love to have a conversation with them if they become sellers, but I don't know if they're selling or are they buying or selling? What are the Rockies doing? What are they, what are all these teams doing that are on the fringe? What about Matt Harvey? Matt Harvey's had a really nice go of it.
Still a risk.
Sure, but all these guys are a risk.
If you're going after Matt Harvey, that's a guy you replace Tyler Chatwood with.
Yes, I would love Matt Harvey to be my 4th or 5th guy. Because Kyle Hendricks got lit up again tonight against the Cardinals. The only game going on in baseball, Cubs and Cardinals. Hendricks didn't get out of the 5th. He's struggling. If you add DeGrom, Harvey, and Yu Darvish to your rotation, okay, now we're cooking with gas. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's a lot there. Anyway, I think the Cubs have the goods to get DeGrom done. It's really a matter of how big their balls are. Like, are you willing as the Mets to pull the trigger on that trade? Because I think Theo would make that trade in a second. Speaking of trades, Carmelo Anthony's an Atlanta Hawk for about 5 minutes. How about this trade? Carmelo Anthony to Atlanta. Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala to OKC. What the hell are the Thunder going to do? What are the Thunder going to do with Dennis Schroeder?
What do you mean he's going to play?
Really? I thought he was just going to sit on the bench.
Well, what do you mean? What are they going to do with the guy? Like, I don't understand the question.
Well, where does he fit into the Thunder rotation?
Well, he makes it so that it lengthens them out. You're not wasting a spot with Melo. So now puts you in a position where Russ can sit. You can continue to play Paul George. And Schroeder can, run the offense. And Paul George can still play off the ball as a scorer.
He's a bench player, Dennis Schroeder. Because
you're a team like the Thunder, he is, yeah.
I'm curious, and this just, again, I don't know that he's a big-time player. He's got the talent to be.
Well, he was their last shot guy, for sure.
Right, he was the shot taker, the shot maker, if you will, for the Atlanta Hawks.
Well,
the worst team, I believe by record, they were the third worst team behind the Suns and Grizzlies last year. On a bad team, Schroeder was their shot maker. And you're totally right. Like, I'm not trying to be difficult about it, but is Dennis Schroeder a guy you want on a team when you're calling yourself a championship contender?
I mean, he played well in the postseason when they were a good team. Like, he gave them contributions.
Okay. I don't think it's to be determined.
You don't want him to be the main guy, obviously, but I think you could do a lot worse. You could do a lot worse.
I would agree with that.
I mean, I think there's a lot of guys out there who don't have the ability of Schroeder. Like, Schroeder can actually play. You can throw a bunch of guys out there with Schroeder, and he'll get it done for a little while.
And he wants to get it done. Yeah. He has swag
about him. I'd
rather
have Schroeder than Reggie Jackson.
He has that little thing, his blonde thing, on his hair thing,
Like, so I'm perfectly okay with it. I mean, I think it's brilliant to get rid of Melo. Have it be Russ. Have a big three instead of having a big three plus Melo. I think it changes the dynamic, and I think this is why Paul George went back. Because he wants to be an equal. He doesn't want to be 1A.
I think it's very interesting. I also think it's interesting that Carmelo Anthony is going to get his entire $27.9 million salary, and then he's going to be a free agent. Is it the Houston Rockets? I don't think that's a slam dunk. Is Carmelo Anthony going to play for the league minimum? I would certainly hope so.
I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, at that point in your career, I mean, you need to.
Better fit, Lakers or Rockets? Because there's a lot of people thinking that Carmelo is going to the Lakers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't love that, but I'm not a huge Melo guy, though. That's my problem. I'm not a huge Melo guy. I don't believe in him. Like, I don't – like, he would really have to show me that he was ready to make a difference on the floor. You know, like, I get that he gave him contributions. I get that he can still score, but in today's game, he does not fit in. He's that awkward guy who just can score out of the elbow post area. He can give you some threes, but, I mean, he was just awful last year. Like, he just was.
Here's the other thing. The Oklahoma City Thunder just dumped you. Like, they broke up with you. They don't want to be with you anymore. And I think he's at a real tipping point in his career. Like, I have no idea how his career ends. Does Carmelo ever win a ring?
This next move will determine that. If he goes to the Lakers, I think it changes their entire team. It changes the dynamic. He needs to be a nobody on that team, and he needs to just play really well.
How much money do you think the Thunder saved with this trade?
Oh, hundreds. Like, it's 73 stupid.
Million. Getting rid of Carmelo Anthony saved them $73 million between salary and luxury tax.
Yeah.
Like, this was a significant deal for them. I just don't know where he goes. You know, because he is a guy that is a ball hog.
Does he go to the East?
I don't think so. Like, where in the East is he a good fit? I mean, Boston doesn't need him. Toronto probably doesn't need him.
Toronto's got the best player in the league now, so.
Yeah, okay. Don't be bitter. Boston brought back Marcus Smart.
Yeah,
on a really on a nice deal. I think he got $12 million a year or something like that.
I don't know where it goes. My point is that I think if you're going to play for the minimum, go to a winning team, be a nobody, go out and win a championship.
I have to think it's the Rockets. Because if he goes to the Rockets, I think this puts him in position to contend for a championship.
Yeah.
I don't think they're better than, like, is that Rocket team better than Oklahoma City Thunder?
No, probably not. But I would say they probably win a 7-game series with OKC.
Really?
Well, yeah, because OKC always figures out a way to mess it up.
Okay. Who's the best team in the West? Well,
there's only one.
Golden State Warriors. They're not better than the Warriors.
No.
In my opinion.
No.
Defensively, they're not. They're in trouble. I think the Rockets are in trouble defensively.
Yeah.
I mean, you're coached by Mike D'Antoni, so of course you're not going to be good defensively. Not to be a jerk about it, but.
It's true.
I think that's a big deal. And Carmelo Anthony, what does he do? He does replace the offense or at least the three ball that you lose from Ariza. And he does give you size because he is a big guy. But I don't think he offers you much offensively. He's not a guy that'll stand in the corner and shoot threes, which is what they really need to have the same offense they had last year.
Yeah.
But Mike D'Antoni is a genius. I mean, the guy truly is gifted.
And that's why I say he's got to take the pride down a notch and do what that team needs him to do.
Yeah.
You know, you're no longer the best player on a team, dude. Like, you're not.
I'm interested to see where this goes.
And by the way, him and CP3 are close, allegedly.
Yeah. So. What about the Heat? I think the Heat are a very interesting landing spot for Carmelo. If he goes to the East, I think that would be the only place that I could see it working.
Yeah.
Would be in Miami because he's not going back to the Knicks, the Nets. Like, I mean, there's not a great fit. Philly doesn't want, I don't think Philly would want or need him.
Yeah.
If I'm him, why would you not go to the Lakers? That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Mainly because they're not going to win a championship this year, I think. But it's Bron. I know are boys.
Yeah, you never know.
You know. By the way, did you see LeBron and KD having dinner together last night?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
I mean, it is. They are truly.
They're good. Very friends,
close.
Man.
They're really close. It gives you a little pause. If it just makes you wonder, what if KD had come to the Lakers? I mean, it gives you a little pause. They would be lethal at that point.
Yeah, they would, for sure.
You know, I just...
They would be better than the Warriors. If KD was a Laker, the Lakers would be better than the Warriors.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, let's get a couple of NFL topics in here. Where are you at on the Dolphins? How about this story today, folks? The Miami Dolphins submitted their list of disciplinary actions. Every team has to submit a list that says, okay, if my player does this, I'm going to do this to discipline him. As part of that list, the Dolphins said that they will suspend players 4 games for kneeling or protesting during the national anthem. You're out of your mind.
I think that's just so ballsy. Like, you gotta, if you're the players, you still have to do it.
If they suspend a guy 4 games for protesting, I think this would be a roster long boycott of that team. I think you would lose every player on that team.
Well, and the thing about it is, if you get enough players doing it, what are you going to suspend everybody?
Well, but you can't let it go that far. And that's my point. First of all, this is the First Amendment. This is the freedom of speech, freedom of expression.
Again, though,
I think you're going to get your ass sued.
Oh, you will. You will. Again, the only reason they can do this, though, is because those guys are technically employees, which means they have to follow rules. And I think people forget that. So just because they're in a stadium, that's their workplace. So they're like, the Dolphins can do this, they're foolish to do it.
I agree.
So silly. Like, I don't know. I don't understand. Like, why would you punish a guy? Why wouldn't you give them an alternative? Hey, guys, we don't want you kneeling because we think it's not the best way to do it. So why don't you try this?
But here's the problem with that. Everybody said that kneeling and anthem protests are why people stopped watching and going to NFL games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Packers released their financials because they're a publicly owned team. The only publicly owned team. The NFL's making money hand over fist. Like, I think Roger Goodell, his only job in life is to print money. And he's doing really well at that. So the anthem protest didn't really hurt their money.
No.
I don't think it hurt their ratings. It didn't hurt their gate. So why are we so anti-allowing guys to kneel? Because it didn't hurt their business model. So I'm trying to figure out...
It's a personal thing. It's clearly a personal thing. Like, I don't know what exactly it is, but you're right. It's not a business thing. I mean, there is no tie to, hey, our 4 guys are kneeling, which means we're losing ticket sales or we're losing TV revenue or whatever.
I don't understand this. I still don't understand. Why are you trying to prevent these guys from doing this? Why is it okay for Michael Bidwell, the owner of the Cardinals, to use the team website to promote Judge Kavanaugh and Donald Trump, but a player can't kneel down and protest because, well, that's bad for the NFL business model? I mean, is there any hotter button than Donald Trump in this country right now?
Nope.
Did you see the Time magazine cover?
Yeah.
Oh. They did it again. The first Time magazine cover was the girl looking up at Donald Trump and crying. This one they released today. It's unbelievable. Did that creep you out when you saw it? I mean, it creeped me out.
It's a little weird.
It's weird. And if you didn't see it, find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. I tweeted out the link to it. It's a face meld. They combine the faces of Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. They combine their two faces and put it on the cover of Time magazine.
Yeah, man. It's crazy.
Can you believe he invited Vladimir Putin to Washington in August? This just... We don't talk a whole lot of politics on this show.
Because it's a black hole.
But this Russian thing is flipping weird. Like, listen, if you're not going to release your tax return, and you're going to keep yelling to anybody who will listen that corruption or collusion didn't happen, and that this is a witch hunt, you probably shouldn't be kissing Vladimir Putin's ass the other day and now inviting him to Washington and changing your story on what you said or what you meant to say instead of what you did say and said. This whole thing just is like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I generally don't believe in chemtrails, or I don't give a damn if somebody is listening on my cell phone. I don't care. I don't generally buy into conspiracy theories, right? I kind of buy the idea that the Russians have something against Donald Trump, that they're holding something over his head. Like, they have leverage over Donald Trump. I don't know what that is. There's a lot of people that think he had hookers or whatever in Moscow. But would hookers in Moscow really be something that Donald Trump would...
We got a real problem if that's where we're at.
Yeah, because he's a hooker-using guy. Like, we just talked about Stormy Daniels. Like, we know that this guy has sex with other women. We know that. Like, are you telling me that he would allow the presidency to be freaking leveraged over that?
Yeah,
Come on. Come on, this is the guy that said grab him in the hee-hee.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this guy ain't going to get all jacked up over a hooker.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is the Russians could have to lord over Donald Trump with, but it's got to be something. It's got to be money or corruption or real estate something or other. I don't know what it is. But this is the first time I've kind of been like, oh, well, maybe they do. Maybe they do.
Yeah.
Maybe they do.
Yeah, it seems like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Anyway, they can't suspend NFL players for four games for kneeling down.
No, I mean, it would just be a travesty. I mean, it would be the beginning of a strike.
We'll be in court for weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be ugly.
Yeah.
You thought Ballgate was a problem. Like, this will be a court battle.
This would be nuclear.
All right, before we go, did you watch the Brady Bunch? You're a millennial.
No.
You don't really watch TV. Marsha Brady was hot.
Okay.
I think everybody wanted part of Marsha Brady. Anyway.
Whatever that was.
I'm creepy. I was being creepy, old man. Anyway, I watched a ton of the Brady Bunch. Okay. My favorite episode is the driving competition episode. You were just boiling in the bag at this point. You weren't even boiling in the bag at this point. Anyway, point is, there was an episode where Greg and Marsha have a driving competition. Was that awkward?
Yeah.
There is an episode where Greg and Marsha have a driving competition. And at the end, they have an egg on a cone. And whoever got closest to the cone without breaking the egg won. Greg intentionally broke the egg to make Marsha feel better. This is my favorite episode. That's all I'm saying. Alice was never hot. Let's just get that straight. Anyway, they used a house in Burbank, California, as the supposed house that the Bradys lived in. So they took shots of it and video the outside of it and, you know. So this is a really famous house
right
now. And up in L.A. And it's on the market. It's two bedrooms.
Millions.
And three bathrooms.
It for what, $5 million?
It is so ugly inside. Like, it is straight out of the 70s. It's got terrible psychedelic wallpaper, like shag carpeting, old kitchen. The stuff you and I used to rip apart in Arizona, like, it's that house.
Yeah.
It's $1.885 million.
That's Cali for you.
It's two bedrooms. $1.885 million.
300 square feet?
I think it's 300 square feet? I think it's only 250. but it's on a 12,000 square foot lot. So you're paying for the land.
What you're paying for.
But they're marketing it as the Brady House.
Well, of course.
That doesn't mean I'm going to pay $2 million for that house because the Bradys were in it.
The house.
Here's the problem. Marsha Brady was never nude in that house. Okay, that's awkward. Do you realize how many...
No, I don't.
See, you don't know this. Okay, so the thing about the Brady Bunch... I swear I don't watch porn. The thing about the Brady Bunch was it was a incestuous hive of sexual tension on the set of the Brady Bunch. Greg Brady, who was the oldest son, I mean, he was a full-on post-pubescent, chest-haired looking man by the time the series ended. So there were all kinds of rumors about him and Mrs. Brady, Florence Henderson, who played Greg Brady's mom, that they were... you know, melding their best characteristics in the dressing room on the set, so to speak, that they were repopulating the Brady world thing. I mean, it was amazing. Like, all the rumors about Greg and Marsha, you don't even know what that means. Like, all those rumors, and then the fact that Peter Brady turned into an absolute sex machine as an adult, and, like... Chris, his name is Christopher Knight. That's the actor's name.
Yeah.
Oh man, him and you're a Howard Stern listener. His wife is, I mean, she's a nine. out of 10. Adriana Lima, I think is her name.
Like the Victoria's Secret model.
Yes. Good afternoon. Right. Like she is, hello. Yeah. Like she's really nice. And him and her like had a VH1 show where all they did was, you know, like germinate the seed of life. Like, I mean, the Brady Bunch had sexification all over that show. And as a kid, I never even noticed it. All I knew was I thought about Marsha Brady in my private time. And I...
Are you okay?
No. Is it hot in here? The point is, I say all of that to say I'm still not paying $1.885 million for that house.
No.
I'm not.
No.
I'm not.
No.
Anyway, the point is...
Yeah.
Lima's interview, and I want to make sure that I get her name right.
That's her name.
Her interview on Howard Stern... was off the chain. Like, she talked about the fact that Christopher Knight and her, essentially at the end of their marriage, never had sex. Like, the last several years they were together, they never had relations of any kind. It's like, dude, are you blind? Like, you, hello? She's unbelievable. I don't understand that. Anyway, I should probably stop.
You know, I get it. I get it. That was your show. I get it.
Curry. Adriana Curry. I said Lima. Adriana Curry. She is unbelievable. Like, nice. She is really a beautiful woman.
Nice.
Okay. I should probably end the show then. I mean, what else am I supposed to do? I need a few minutes. It's hot in here. I need... Can I get some water? Like, it's hot. Make sure you find us on iTunes. Well, it's not awkward, man. What? It's not awkward. What? Adriana Curry, now that I know her name, is hot.
Is this like Curry's sister? Or?
No, they're not related. Now, see, why would you bring Steph Curry?
And by the way, where's Tom Brady in this mix? Like,
oh, man. See, now you're ruining it. You're like Steph Curry and Tom Brady. I don't want to think about them. Oh, man. Now it's cold in here. Find us on the iHeartRadio app, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Until tomorrow, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.